This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
Remember one night in the dining room, there was this young naval officer, and he was sitting near our table with two other officers.
No.
The waiter brought him a message. Which point he left. Nothing rings a bell?
No.
Well, I first saw him that morning in the lobby. He was checking into the hotel, and he was following the bellboy with his luggage to the elevator. He glanced at me as he walked past, just a glance. Nothing more. But I could hardly move. That afternoon, Helena went to the movies with her friend, and you and I made love, and we made plans about our future, and we talked about Helena, and yet no time was he ever out of my mind.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Film Effect with Tiff. I am back after many weeks of not recording, and I'm really sorry, guys. It's been a little hectic with life in general, and but I have been watching movies and TV, and I did find a guest this week. She's with me right now. Her name is Ryan Vai.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, Tiff.
Hey, man. It was great. So, do you want to just share a little bit about you and then this movie pick?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a local artist, and I do fine oil paintings. I'm also the artist development director for DAC, which is a nonprofit down here. We help a lot of local artists, and that's where we met. And the film that kind of came to mind when you asked me if I wanted to do the podcast was Eyes Wide Shut. It's one of my favorite Kubrick films, and there's just so much to delve into with it. It's a great topic.
It's a great pick. It's funny because I actually had forgotten about it for some reason, and I only saw it one time way back in the day. So I was kind of like excited to rewatch it. It felt like a little bit almost like I was watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But so if you are wondering what this movie is, let me give you the information. So Eyes Wide Shut, as you mentioned, is a Kubrick film, Stanley Kubrick. It was his last film.
Yeah, his 13th film.
Holy cow. And it came out in 99. Wow. I'm trying to remember how old I was in 99. I don't even know. It's like, what age was I? I know I graduated high school in 91. So, but I do remember this being a very hyped movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty long movie, so it's even then. I mean, I think now movies are pretty long sometimes, but I think even then, if it was like over 2 hours, it was kind of considered like a very lengthy movie. And I think I did see this in the theater from what I remember. Directed by Stanley Kubrick, written by Stanley Kubrick, the screenplay, and also Frederick Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
There's one more screenwriting credit. Who are you? Arthur Schnitzler.
Yeah, it was. He was an author in 1926 who wrote a novella that was called Traum Nouvelle, and it means dream story. And that's what Eyes Wide Shut is based on. It's basically a short story about a woman who has this erotic dream and shares it with her husband. Mm-hmm. And the dream wasn't about her husband. And so the story talks about his sort of like psychotic meanderings in the following days after this confession. And that's essentially the nut inside of Eyes Wide Shut.
I was going to say that's like the setup for the whole movie, yeah. Right? So obviously it has Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, the mm-hmm. two main actors, has Sydney Pollack in it and a lot of other people, yeah. Todd Field, Peter Benson, Jackie Soares. I don't even know how to say her name. Sorry. Leslie Lowe. It's not a big cast of people. It's a very small cast of people, but, I think, and I was saying this to someone before you, to the people I was just talking to before you came and sat down. One thing I do remember about this movie was there was a lot of hype because it was Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, at the height of their
at the height
fame.
Of their fame, and that they were together, and yeah. that they hadn't really been on screen together. And then, of course, you know that this movie was a little bit sexy, and it had this like very controversial kind of topic. I don't even remember knowing exactly what it was about, but I knew it was going to be edgy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, actually, if that kind of diluted my take on it. Because I was just looking to see them act.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when the film came out, there was a lot of hype. Like you said, it was, you know, people were really looking forward to the release of the film because it was another Kubrick film. And Nicole and Tom Cruise were so popular. They were the it couple at the time.
Right.
But the film itself didn't get a lot of great acclaim when it came out. People were actually pretty disappointed in it.
Yeah.
They didn't get it. And I think it's because they thought it was going to be a lot more pornographic than it actually was,
and it was like a letdown.
Yeah, but I will say that
the
film is about lust and jealousy, and there's a lot of nudity in the film, but it's not yeah. gratuitous. I think that it's fitting and it's poignant because you couldn't tell that story without the element of human sexuality.
True.
Yeah.
True. So let me ask before we even get into it for you personally. So you did pick this movie. Is there like a reason that this movie was your choosing?
I think it's really interesting. I really like to think about human psychology and the unconscious mind and the interactions that humans have with each other, especially in modern culture. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of stereotypes about the transactional nature of sex. And I noticed in a lot of your other podcasts that prostitution is a theme.
You know what's funny? I didn't mean that to happen, but I think there was a period because, you're right, because I talked about, as you guys know, Pretty Woman, which
yeah.
is the flip opposite of Promising Young Woman, and in many other movies too. Yeah, I don't know how that... It's funny how this show will take its little turns, you know?
What do humans find most interesting? It's always sex and money, right?
I guess so.
You know, so this film's got it all. And not only that, but it really dives into like a more honest and well-rounded perspective on those things because it's not this like sugar-coated, you know, tale of boy meets girl. It's about the dark depths of like lust and psychosis and secrets and the things that maybe you should and shouldn't share with your lover. And
yeah.
I think that everyone can relate to that.
Yeah. It does feel, I will say just right off, you know, the top, it's like it is very stylized and it's almost a world that doesn't even seem real, even for the time.
It's supposed to be that way, I think.
Yeah, it's very, and I don't know why I kept thinking this when I was watching it, but it was like, you know, I was wondering how much of this was Kubrick, even the story and the way it plays out, coming from a male perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what I felt a lot of this was.
Yeah.
Obviously, because you're following Tom Cruise's character, Dr. William Harford.
Dr. Bill.
I'm a doctor.
Dr. Bill. Yeah. Dollar Bill.
I guess we get it. Oh, Dollar Bill. Look yeah. at that. Okay. So I guess let me just jump back. So for you, I guess you're saying it's just interesting in that aspect, psychologically, the sexual roles that we play, everything you just said. And well, that's interesting. When did you see this movie? Because can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 33. So when the film first came out, I was still, I was probably like 12 years old.
I was going to say.
So I was still a little bit too young. But you know what? Young people, they notice things. And
did you see it when you were young?
I may have. Maybe I
cool
didn't see
parents.
It. I had very cool parents. Yeah. I don't think I saw it until I was probably about 15. But you know, the thing about this film in particular.
Okay, yes.
Is the everyone always thinks of the scene of the ritual in the mansion, and
yeah.
You know the nude women, and that is a shocking visual for any person, but especially a young impressionable female mind.
I was gonna say,
yeah, and
you're like the girls are all naked and the guys are in disguise. Yeah, what
and,
is
well,
happening?
The
right
women
now?
Were some women were also in disguise.
That's right, they
you
were.
Know?
Yeah.
And I think that it's especially been on my mind as of late. Because of the all of the exposure happening with like Jeffrey Epstein and the media,
yes. Okay.
And the revelations that have been happening. I'm also very interested in like mysticism and the occult and studies.
Okay.
So it's a very satisfying film to watch in that it touches on these areas of elitism mm-hmm. and also of like base human existence. And all of the strange sort of like synchronicities that can occur
mm-hmm.
in a place like New York City.
True.
Yeah.
And wealth. What's
yeah.
weird for me, and this is just weird timing, and anybody listening, I'm not going to ruin this for you, hopefully, but I've been listening to another podcast that is called, I think it's called Unraveled, and it's about the serial killer on Long Island. I don't know if you ever heard about that.
No, it sounds cool though.
I saw a show about it. I'm obsessed with true crime. So
yeah,
if you're listening, you know. You've heard me talk about true crime on here probably. But what was weird about this movie, in line with what I've been listening to, is that basically they haven't been able to catch this person. I've seen shows about it. It's just still kind of a giant mystery. But the theme that they come up with and the idea that they think this might be is a bunch of different things, not just like one person.
Mm-hmm.
But these are like prostitutes who were getting dumped on, you know, the highway.
Oh, shit.
And where this is taking place is a very, it's Long Island, but it's like parts of Long Island that are very elitist. And the stories you start to hear about these prostitutes is they were kind of like being lured in and, you know, they're hinting to, as I'm listening to this show, kind of something that sounds really similar to that scene that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
which is girls being lured into these very, like, explicit parties
mm-hmm.
with people that do not want to be known who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of money happening mm-hmm. at houses. I mean, I was literally, like, watching the movie, and I'm like, this shit really happened. I'm like, and people are dead, okay?
Yeah.
Like, cops involved, wealthy people, cover-ups, like all kinds of stuff. So there's a lot of theories about this kind of actually happening in a way like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a very secretive kind of part of the society,
it's
which is
fascinating.
It is really fascinating.
Is.
So I'm really hooked on this podcast. But all right, well, let's get into the story a little bit.
Yeah.
Shall we? Okay. So what I'm going to give for you listening, people listening, I'll give a real quick description here. I'll read the one sentence description. A New York City doctor embarks on a harrowing night-long odyssey of sexual and moral discovery after his wife reveals a painful secret to him. Okay, so that is kind of the setup. I remember that being the pivotal point in the story, even from when I saw it the first time. And I remember that scene being like, you know, for Nicole Kidman, that was like the scene, right?
Yeah.
It's so weird for, I will say for me now, I guess when I saw this movie, I was probably in my 20s and now I'm 47 and I've been married and I have children and I've been in a relationship that's, you know, I'm a very different person watching this movie now than the person I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And it's interesting now because I'll be honest, I really felt like it was kind of like, so what, you know?
Right.
It didn't have an impact on me.
Right, right.
When she reveals, you know, they go to this, you know, they showcase this couple, they're wealthy, he's a doctor, they have a very fancy, you know, kind of life. They're going to this party, there's people in tuxes. I mean, that's what I was saying. I'm like, what kind of parties are these? But I guess that's what it is. And you get the sense from the party scene that they're mingling with people they know, but they're also mingling with other people they don't know. And they start to hint to this idea that the two of them are safe in their marriage, but they like to, they're being persuaded in other directions.
Flirting.
Yeah. She's meeting this man that's like kind of flirting with her, this older man, and they dance together and he keeps kind of asking her about herself. Mm-hmm. She's a beautiful woman.
Yes.
I don't know. She's married. What a shame. He's flirting around with these two women who are obviously like very flirtatious.
Yes.
And so they're setting up this whole thing. And then the bedroom scene. So go ahead. You have notes, I see.
I do.
Go to your notes.
So I think that in the confession scene with Nicole Kidman, who plays Alice in this marriage, what's interesting about it is that it she really gets heated in this discussion because of the sort of like double standard stereotype that her husband, Bill, Tom Cruise, brings up. And he implies that men will talk to women because they want to have sex with them, but that he trusts that Nicole Kidman, Alice, will not act on that and shit because women don't behave in that way.
Right.
It's just not in their nature. And this, I think, enrages her on a level because she then proceeds to tell him this very lurid story of them on vacation where she sees this young naval officer and has this fantasy in her mind that if he would have her, that she would leave everything.
I know, all that was crazy.
And I think that that's what it was. It wasn't just her sharing a fantasy. It was her throwing in his face that her sexuality and her own independent lusts and desires are powerful, and it's a thing to be contended with. And I think that that really threw him off guard and was alarming to him in a way that he wasn't expecting.
Right.
You know, that's a, I'm sure that anyone who's been in a long-term relationship can understand how upsetting the notion of that kind of an impulsive abandonment of the other, how threatening and how hurtful that could be. But like you said, this was a fantasy in her mind.
Right.
And it results in Bill going on an actual campaign in reality for adventure. And
he like took it as permission.
I don't know. See,
or
what,
something. What? He was just, and I, and maybe this is something we'll talk about too, is it's a little bit of him going off and kind of processing all of those feelings, all those reactions.
Yes.
And then the world presenting in every which way.
And that's where it becomes kind of surreal, right?
Yeah.
Because what are the odds that you're going to encounter, you know, propositions from, you know, prostitutes, get invited to secret occult elite
it's
parties?
Crazy. Yeah.
It's extremely disorienting and unlikely. And really, I think that we don't know what his motivation is explicitly, whether he's looking for a revenge fuck or if he's actually just like dealing with these propositions as they arise and sort of like following the lead.
And I think that's the, where they're where they're keeping you the whole time is in this space of like, I mean, I guess we're supposed to be Tom Cruise where it's like, okay, what do I do with this information?
Yeah.
And do I want to, I mean, it is very moment to moment. It is funny how much he is trying to be the good guy. Even within those moments, his whole personality, you know, it was cracking me up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He always maintains this, like, I guess the first, let's walk through it a little bit. The first thing you see, which happens at the party before the confession, is his older friend who is having this issue with this woman in his room, or where were they anyway in that place? In a hotel room?
They were at this character's house.
Okay.
And so this is where prostitution and themes of secrecy and obsession start, and the consequences of those things start to come into play.
So true.
This very wealthy man lives in this opulent house. He's having a very decadent Christmas party, and there's all kinds of the Star of Ishtar and all of these strange things are actually in these scenes. So he's upstairs in the bathroom with this beautiful woman who has just overdosed on drugs. and Bill goes up to tend to her as a doctor so that this man doesn't get in trouble. And that's where you start to see these, like, power plays, because it's not clear that there's an actual genuine concern for the woman who's in distress. It's more about protecting the reputation of this man who, during his own party with his wife downstairs, is, you know, having sex with a prostitute up in the bathroom.
Gotta love it.
And
there's
already a conspiracy in play here, because the security guards, Bill, and this man are now keeping a secret from everyone else downstairs, including Bill's wife. He doesn't tell Alice that this happened.
Right. And maybe the setup is that only men are doing this. Because what's interesting to me is that happens, and he doesn't even really do anything.
Isn't that fascinating?
He just, like, hangs out, checks her, whatever.
He just says, look at me, look at me.
And then you're right. And then she just comes out of it. Mm-hmm. And then he does kind of say, you know, you really should get some help.
Yeah.
It's like trying to be kind of fatherly or something. And that felt very like that to me. Like, he's like, you really should, you know, take care of yourself here. But so that's the first thing you see, is that men are deceptive. Men are, you know, behaving in any way they want with the expectation that they'll be able to get out of it. Or it's okay, almost that it's like okay for wealthy, rich, white men to just do that. Almost as if it's, like, understood.
Well, yeah. I think that what's even more interesting is that we're looking at sex and the sexes, the genders, and power.
Yeah.
And how they leverage power over each other. You don't get to see a lot of the consequence of female power in this situation, aside from access to what the men have.
That's true.
But I think that this film really underlies the fact that women are leveraging their sexuality, their beauty, and desirability for what men are holding in this game of power, which is status and assets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. It's just funny because that happens, the confession happens, and then the next thing that happens is he is being called to someone's house because this woman's father has passed away.
Yes, yes.
And right away, now, this is when you say the world becomes surreal.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, in the weirdest moment, mm-hmm. is suddenly like, I'm in love with you. And she tries to kind of, a little bit, like, aggressively, mm-hmm. you know, come at him.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, whoa, you know?
Oh, yeah. And this is cool because it's a doubling, which Kubrick uses a lot in his films.
Right.
This is an analogy. It's a metaphor for how the conversation that Bill and Alice were just having about how a woman would leave everything that she has because of this instinct for lust or this inclination suddenly. You know, it's clear that her name is Marion in the film, and her father, Nathan, died,
right. mm-hmm.
who was one of Bill's patients. And she says that she's engaged and she's about to get married. And then suddenly she's in wildly, madly, you know.
But
love.
I love you. And he's like, I've spoken to you like one time.
And
it's kind of funny.
I think that that's what really sets him over the edge, because not only did Alice just confess that she would do this thing, but now he's witnessing a woman who's a stranger to him,
mm-hmm.
Including him in that same dynamic that he was in denial of. And I think that that's what really makes him unhinged.
Yeah. And then the funniest part, too, is that her husband or her boyfriend shows up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he kind of looks almost exactly like Tom Cruise.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also was like, oh, my God, it's the guy from Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's in a real movie. Holy shit. But yeah. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's a weird scene. And then more things start to kind of happen to him.
Yeah.
That he keeps taking the bait on, you know, he gets presented with something and then he can make a choice. He chooses to try. And of course it doesn't work out for him over and over again.
Yep.
Let me ask this, like, as a woman, her confession, did you find that to be alarming, or was that just like, sure?
I think that the confession itself, like, it was the way that she conveyed it that was distressing. It wasn't that she had a dream about being, you know, being with another man.
Right.
We all have dreams. We all have inner landscapes and fantasies and things that intrigue us. And it's not wrong. I think it's productive to be honest about things like that with your partner. But where she crossed the line was in needing to tell him that she would have left him and her daughter.
Right.
If she would have even gotten the slightest indication from this stranger, you know, it seemed like she was intentionally provoking him.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, what's weird is we don't know much about them.
No.
And they're also high and drunk.
Yes.
And they've just had sex and it's very late, I'm sure.
Yes.
And this was another thing I was wondering is this a comment on women just playing out, you know, her kind of toying with him? And I know this sounds weird, but I've been married and, you know, I've been in relationships. And I think even if it's not because there's a reason to be that way, some people, it's like, you know, you're poking. It's like stirring the pot, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe she just didn't like, she's in this world of what you're talking about, this kind of elitist men, I'm the doctor, you know, kind of thing. And she's very aware of the way she's perceived and the way that the role that she plays. And maybe she just wanted to kind of, you know, instigate him a little bit. And
yeah.
And you don't know why. I think that piece is a little interesting for me just because I think people probably do that in relationships sometimes. And maybe the next day it's like, I don't know what I said, you know, whatever, you know. And but then again, there's more stuff that she says later. So you kind of start to, you're right, you do kind of start to wonder if she's saying this to kind of put him in check or she's upset about something else. Who knows? But I guess in this terms of the movie, it's just about him grappling with his identity, I think. A little bit in his marriage, his role in his life, it's suddenly like he has no idea who he is anymore, almost, when it comes to women and him. It's just, it's not even about sex. It's about, I don't know, it just becomes about that to me, like watching him try to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of like trying to be the good guy, and then he crosses over, but then he comes back over again.
Well, he gets interrupted every time.
Every
he's
time.
About to,
every
so
time.
He doesn't even...
No.
We don't know. It's very ambiguous, like, what his, you know... I don't think anybody comes out as being a good guy or a bad guy in this film, which I enjoy because no one is all good or all bad.
But, right, true.
In that confession that she makes in the beginning, and then we'll get into some of the later bits of the film, but she does get upset that he doesn't feel jealous. He says he doesn't feel jealous when other men are hitting on her.
Right.
And I think in long-term relationships, we do poke at each other and provoke each other. And you almost want to instigate a certain level of that tension, that jealousy, that possessiveness, because it enlivens you and it can convince you to think and to believe that your partner still desires you and wants you in that way. And I think in a longer relationship, in marriages, that's an important part of the experience of love that can start to change and transform over time, and people question these things.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It does seem like he cares, though, and there's a couple instances, like if you want to talk about a few more scenes, the scene where he goes to get the costume. And, of course, this guy's daughter is, like, screwing around with these two older men.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, unexpected.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, what is going on? She runs up behind him, and she's kind of, like, hugging him, you know, Tom Cruise's character. And he's, like, kind of protecting her.
Yeah.
And then later in the scene where he returns it, you find out that he didn't do anything. And he's upset, actually.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, I thought you were going to call the cops, and now it's like all fine.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm offering her to you now.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, that's... we get the three levels of prostitutes in this film. The first one that we talked about was the woman in the bathroom, Mandy, who overdoses.
Right.
And she's sort of like the elitist escort in this situation. She's dealing with the upper echelons of men in power. then we get to Domino, who is the streetwalker that Bill meets right before he goes to the costume shop.
Yeah, these are some good-looking prostitutes. Okay?
They're all redheads too, just like Bill's wife Alice.
That's right.
So there's something to be said for how surreal this film is, in that they could all be different versions of Alice and also his daughter,
his wife. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And then I believe it's Lily Sobieski who is the young girl Milich's daughter, who he ends up turning. He ends up kind of becoming her pimp and offering her up to Bill as a product. And that's another kind of sexual transaction mm-hmm. that takes place. So we're getting into like this complex hierarchy of women as products and men as consumers.
It's true.
Which is very interesting. And each woman has a slightly different attitude about what they're doing as well, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, like Domino seems pretty in charge of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to like it. I think the weirdest part of that scene for me with what's her name, Lily,
mm-hmm.
Is how into it she was.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is like a double thing, like you said, which is first of all, the first take on it is that she's being taken advantage of,
mm-hmm.
but that's not the sense that you get at all.
No.
She's actually giggling and running around and being like, really like, oh, I did a bad thing. But it's obvious she wanted to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is playing again on his whole issue here, which is like, basically it's like he has no idea anymore what women are.
Well, it's the other thing that I think is really cool and interesting and you know, it's kind of like one of these existential questions that I often ask myself. When we're looking at power structures in terms of like male and female existence, we already established that women tend to transact through sex and through desire, whereas men tend to transact through power and money.
Mm-hmm.
And what this film is looking at is that, you know, women come into power earlier in life than men do. Women are beautiful and I'm speaking stereotypically, like this is the archetype and stereotype. I'm not explicitly saying that this is true, but this is what the film is telling us. This is commentary.
Mm-hmm.
These women are young. They're not as experienced as the men who are, you could say, taking advantage of them or, you know, eliciting services from them. The men are older, they're more experienced, but the women are having their way with what they do have. And I think it's interesting to see Lily's character in particular, because she's very playful and mischievous. And I think that it's like when you're a young woman and you start getting attention for the first time mm-hmm. from, you know, someone that finds you exciting and desirable, it's like you've suddenly been handed like a Corvette or something and you just want to push the pedal down. You know, you just want to like see what it is that what is this thing, this machine that I now am, you know, operating, that I'm inhabiting. And I don't think men have that same experience. Young men aren't looked at like sexual objects. And whether you're into it or not as a young woman, whether that's an asset you do or do not want to embrace, as soon as you get to a certain age, it's something you do have to contend with.
True.
You know? And obviously people, when you're young and you're not experienced, you can take it way too far and terrible things can happen.
Yeah. It's a weird thing in the movie though, because, and I'll admit for me, it felt a little like BS mm-hmm. because I was like, that would never happen. That girl is not happy. That's my, I'm being honest. I was kind of like thinking that. And then I thought, if that's true, if there's a little bit of truth to the way he orchestrated this, it's just more of a perspective he's witnessing. It's almost like, is any of this real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way we're seeing him react and take in all of these experiences based on what he's now dealing with is Tom Cruise, is Bill William perceiving this in a way that's not even really happening. Now, that would be a whole other weird theory to take on in a scene like that, because it did feel surreal to me. And I know it's just a weird scene to start, but I don't know why.
Well,
I just,
it's provocative.
I really was having trouble with it in the sense that I'm like, this is purposeful and it like works for the movie, but it didn't feel like something that was very realistic to me, even in a movie sense, like that a girl would want to be fooling around with these two specific kinds of guys.
It does seem...
it felt odd.
It does feel outlandish and unlikely and disturbing because of the age gap and her being outnumbered. But I like that Kubrick is provocative about these things. And I do... I mean, if you're a young person and you don't have a lot of control over your existence and people don't really respect what you think and you can't really do a lot because you're young,
right?
If you find that you have this quality that you can use to get what you want or to control older people,
sure,
I could see where that could potentially be a pretty exciting button to push.
Yeah, or money. I thought about
exactly.
money again. I mean, you know, maybe she's trying to make money.
Yeah.
Kind
of
behind her father's back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's in a city and it's a different world and
yeah,
who knows, you know? Who knows where they are in that moment. But that was pretty interesting. Does any of this stuff have like a personal effect on you? Like, I don't know. I'm just curious. Share some personal stuff. Listen, I'll say for me, and this is, I've shared a lot on the show, you know, it's fun to watch movies like this because the roles are so clear, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the men are men and the women are... And I have always shared on this, some of my struggles growing up being a woman is I've never really felt like that. Like, when people talk about this, like, oh, coming into your power of your femininity, I have never had that. I've never felt comfortable. And this has nothing to do with identity. It's just something that I never really felt that. I never felt, and maybe it's because of my physicality that I've never been perceived that way by men. Never. Men never came after me, even boys. Like, I had tons of boyfriends, but it was not like, you know, I could be, this is my joke, I would be with my boyfriend, a girl like you're talking about would walk past us, and he would comment on that girl.
Oh, God.
So it would always be that I'm like... I'm great and I'm cute and I'm a bunch of other things, but I am not a powerful female
mm-hmm.
that could use my femininity to allure men. You know what I'm saying? So maybe for me watching that scene, it's funny because I'm like, okay, you know, like this kid, I mean, and she's beautiful, but, and I know it's deeper than what you just look like on the outside, but you know, there are no women in this movie that aren't almost perfect.
That's true as well.
I mean, look at them.
It's
like,
true.
Every single one of them is the epitome of whatever you look at in a magazine, you know, like a sexual example of just like a perfect woman.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, but I think you guys know what I'm talking about. So that part is interesting to me. It's also triggering for me. And I wonder, you know, I don't feel like men experience this.
Men
in any way.
In what way?
In a way of feeling having to come into some kind of power of their being.
Well, they come into that power later in life.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to come around their physicality.
No, it doesn't.
Never.
It doesn't. And
it seems like to me, in my own experience, I think they have tons of insecurity in different ways, and that's what this story is about.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's I'm kind of rambling, but do you want to share
fine.
Some of the stuff that you have?
Yeah.
About let's get into the cult scene.
Okay, yeah.
Why don't we go there?
That's the juicy stuff.
Yeah, let's get into the juicy stuff.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I will admit too, you know, if you're watching this the first time, it starts to almost become this dark thriller. You know, he gets this weird moment where he meets the guy at the bar or the jazz club, his friend from med school who's got this bizarre gig, you know?
Yep.
And he, so he, you know, then he's on a mission to get to this experience. And listen, I could see that. Forget even if you want to go screw around. I mean, who doesn't want to be a witness of some secretive, you know, mystery party? It sounds like very alluring. But also a little bit dangerous. So go ahead. So he goes to this thing.
Yep. So Bill finds Nick, this friend of his from college, and he overhears him getting the password for this party where he plays the piano blindfolded. Mm-hmm. Last time he was there, his blindfold slipped, and he saw that there was this orgy taking place, and, you know, who could pass up the chance to see that? That's right. A pretty bizarre, you know, rare opportunity. And given the state of mind that Bill is in, this is, you know, the perfect fit for him. So he goes, that's when, you know, he goes to the costume shop, which we already covered, and he gets his costume. He takes a taxi up to the mansion where he's got the password, and he, I'm going to mention this briefly because I thought that this was pretty significant. He takes out a $100 bill in the taxi. And I mentioned earlier that Dr. Bill and Dollar Bill are a pretty similar, they sound similar. And I don't think Kubrick makes accidents in his films. He's very deliberate about these things. Mm-hmm. He rips this dollar bill in half. And I think this is kind of symbolic of him ripping himself in half.
Oh.
In that he's sort of like leaving part of himself out there, and he's about to enter this.
That's pretty cool.
An underworld. So he goes into this beautiful mansion, and also in this film, the opulence of each place they go into is, it just ramps up to, like, you know, degrees that are unimaginable.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. And
there's always so much darkness with money.
There is. Yes. Yeah, there is.
It's this, or at least we believe there is, maybe. Maybe that's what it's commenting on. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is the like the big iconic scene out of the whole film. There's like a Gregorian chant that is actually a Turkish prayer being sung backwards, which tells you something.
That's weird.
And there's really strong utilizations of the colors red and blue throughout this whole film, which is really significant because they sort of play on these different aspects of lust and comfort.
Oh, yeah.
So when we're in the mansion, everything is red, deep, you know, deep red.
Yes.
He observes this interesting ritual. Everyone's cloaked and sort of like ambiguous and masked, which is fascinating because, you know, masks, Venetian masks in particular, are like a very old tradition of applying the persona over the human, the masks that we wear, the characters that we play. And as this ritual takes place, slowly these women start to disrobe, and they are only wearing their masks in a circle around this central figure.
Mm-hmm.
They start to disperse around the room and pick different men. So one of these women walks up to Bill and warns him that he's in danger, right? Which I think we could have known that already.
What was weird about it, and is like the continuing mystery as the story goes on, is how did she know it was him?
Well, that's where it we don't know in the film.
We don't know. And
it's surreal.
Yeah, again. And it's kind of like, then you could start coming up with all sorts of things later. You know,
yeah.
There's the theory that, I think I read a bunch of things where people sometimes thought that it was Alice.
Yeah.
At the party.
Yep. Because,
But that doesn't make sense to me either.
No.
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 I don't buy that one, so.
It could almost, I mean, and this is a stretch, but.
Go for it.
It could almost be like a symbol of his conscience.
Yes.
Is what I would say, very loosely, because we don't get a lot of answers. This movie poses questions. It doesn't give you, like, defined parameters or solutions for any of these problems. It really is a provocative movie.
Yeah.
So, sure. You know, we really don't know who these people are or what their intentions are. You know, Bill's in this situation now, in this mansion, in this occult secret society, where he's not supposed to be, and he's right off the bat, he knows that they know, someone knows that he does not belong there.
Mm-hmm.
And just as he's being warned about this, someone comes and sort of whisks this woman away, and instead of leaving, Bill presses deeper and deeper into this world where he's observing all of these people engaging in you know, orgiastic behavior, and it's very decadent, and, you know...
It's also maintains a very dark feel.
And it's very controlled.
Yeah, like, there's nothing... Like, there's stuff happening, which just... It even felt like to me, like... What is fun here?
Like, I felt, I was like, what
these
kind
people
of?
Aren't even enjoying this orgy. Like, yeah. There was a guy in a mask, just like, there's people doing it on the table, and he's just got his hands crossed, and he's like sitting very still. And I'm thinking, like,
yeah, it's
this
weird.
Is twisted. Like, it's, listen, I've never been to an orgy, so I don't know what they are like. I've heard of other people tell me about these things. I don't know why, but it doesn't seem like. It would be something that would be something you'd really enjoy.
Right, right.
It's bizarre. Yeah. So it did become, and I think that maybe was, you're right, maybe now I'm playing this out, but it's probably purposeful because what happens at the end of the scene takes him on a completely other path,
mm-hmm.
which is that someone's now possibly been murdered.
Two people.
Yeah. And that would mean maybe this is a dark kind of cult scenario if these people are doing mm-hmm. this and they could possibly end up dead. So,
yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. So essentially, Bill doesn't get too far into this this mansion world of secrets and mysteries before someone pulls him aside and mentions that his taxi is waiting for him and he needs to go talk to who's in the taxi. They don't take him to the taxi. They take him back into the main room where he witnessed the ritual. The red cloaked figure, who's clearly like the priest or who's operating this whole dynamic, confronts him and warns him, you know, that he can't speak of this to anyone. It initially seems like they ask him to strip and take his mask off, and he's very reluctant.
I was kind of hoping he would strip.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
No. The woman, though.
Saved by the lady.
Yes, again. So this vixen comes, and it's the woman who warned him initially, and she says that she will essentially... take his place.
Right.
And Bill tries to find out what that means. It sounds extremely ominous, but he's escorted out before he finds the, you know, what happens to her. And he goes home, hides his shame, his cloak, his mask, and he discovers, you know, this is a long night for Bill.
I also want to comment. He never sleeps.
Also true.
I'm thinking, like, what in the fuck is happening? This guy has not slept, and then he's getting up and doing something else. I'm like, there's no way.
Uh-uh.
No. So it does kind of add to this idea that this is all just playing out in his own mind in some way. It's just very dreamlike.
It is.
But yeah, so that's the other thing I was thinking. I'm like, he doesn't go to bed ever.
No. So now we get to the second confession from Alice. When he goes home, she's hysterically laughing in her sleep.
God.
And, you know, he wakes her up and she tells him that she was just dreaming about the naval officer again. And, you know, she goes into some details about how she was naked and he was laughing at her. And she kind of restrains herself and doesn't go forward. But Bill knows that's not the full dream. So he.
Yeah, and then she's also crying while she's telling him this and hugging him.
Yeah.
It's a really weird scene.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Then she proceeds to tell him that she had a dream that was actually quite reflective of what he had just left, in that she was in a crowd of all of these naked people. And she said that she was having sex with all these men and she didn't even know how many there were. And she's very upset by this. And, you know, obviously Bill is distraught by this. And that's where people get the idea that potentially she could have
been at
this
party.
Yeah. It's so similar.
It's hard for me because she's dead asleep
mm-hmm.
as he's just getting back.
Mm-hmm.
She would have to have some serious... quickness of like, get me out of here, drive the car. Like, it's almost impossible. I'm like, there's no way that could possibly have happened.
No.
So easily.
No.
For it to be some kind of game. But I think that maybe that's the point of the two of the movie, is that you're being put in the place of that. confusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you're not only experiencing like what he's, you're just feeling what he's feeling, which is kind of like, this is what the fuck's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, every time there's no real answers. One of the other frustrating scenes to me personally is when he finally meets with, I think his name is Victor, the older man, that
yes,
his friend.
Yes, yes.
And he's like saying, I saw you there. Okay. Like, I know you were there and you have to like not, there's no, he doesn't ask any of the right questions. I'm like, there's no question about, yeah, okay, you were there. What the fuck is this thing? Like, what is it?
Right.
He doesn't even ask that question.
Right.
Nothing. He's more concerned with, I don't even know what. I forget what he even asks him, but it felt like that scene was so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned before, it doesn't give us any real information.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, and then I kept thinking like, what?
Yeah, it's...
If that was somebody I knew, I would be like, yo, Victor, what is going on here? Okay? Are these... Can you please fill me in? Because that was crazy.
Yes.
There's no real conversation.
Yeah.
It's just... More confusion.
It is. It is. Blurring the lines.
And he's lying, too. He's saying, like, which I thought was an obvious lie, was that, like, nothing happened to her. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, that was to scare you.
Yeah.
That was just all fake. That was all to scare you so that you wouldn't talk, you know?
Right. Right.
Which he doesn't believe.
Well, who would? I mean,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, whatever. It's a frustrating movie to watch, kind of, if you think about it.
It is really frustrating, but it really, I think that it underscores that the whole, like, the nature of jealousy and of, like, something like that, like, a jealous experience taking root in your mind, like, there are no solid conclusions. Like,
nope.
If you're suspicious of someone you care deeply about and it's haunting you and you're having difficulty processing it, there's no like clean way to sort it out, and there are no clear answers. Sometimes it just eats at you.
Yeah.
You know, and you,
I mean, there is one solution that he did not try to deal with this, is to just connect with your wife, you know, like his manner of dealing with it was to get quiet and go outward.
Right.
You know, instead of facing it head on. And I mean, that's the comment too, is that this guy is not willing to not take it in a, I don't know, in a devastating way, and just kind of get curious and then be like, well, let's dive in, you know?
Yeah.
You know, here are my fears. Here are my insecurities. Here are my really, you know, scary truths.
Yeah.
Let's put them on the table, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't, it's all, and I think the comment, and that was kind of a sad comment to me, but I do think it's a true one, especially for people that are these kind of people probably, is that they just can't.
Yeah, some people can't.
They just can't. And so they agree to kind of ignore it, mm-hmm, you know, and mm-hmm, move on. And maybe now they're more aware of whoever they thought they were with isn't who they think.
And I, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, and it's ongoing because this thing, you know, the mind is, it's yours, you know. No one else gets to get in there but you.
That's right, unless you invite it by invitation only.
Right. And I think that's maybe the scary comment for people that are, if you haven't been married, guys. Yeah, I mean, you, I think this idea that you think you know you're a person, even in that, on that level, is a real true awakening. And I feel like at this point in my life, that's like a given to me. Like when I watched it now, I was kind of like, well, yeah, of course, you know,
right, right, right.
Who knows what he's got in his head, you
right.
know, like these are the things that we do. And sometimes, you know, especially in a marriage, because there's no room
yeah.
anymore, you know, when you're single, you can almost play out all these ideas and you can do what you want. But the sheer construct of what a marriage is doesn't allow that.
Yes.
So people grapple with it, and we're only human. So it's like, okay. I guess the shock of the story is that it's coming from her.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, the story obviously it really plays into like male and female stereotypes.
It's true.
And I almost like grotesquely so. It's like so over the top in boxing each character into like female stereotype, male stereotype. And it's almost to the point where it's like so in your face that you start to deconstruct those assumptions yourself, which is what a good film should do.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think that the real like core question that this film left with me was like, are we better off keeping certain things to ourselves or not?
Good point.
How far do you go with transparency before it becomes gratuitous and destructive?
It's a good question.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, it is a question.
I think it's something that people, I think some people may have relationships that are really like that.
Mm-hmm.
But even within that, there's always, you know, stuff that you can't say. I mean, listen, now that we're talking about it, it's a great movie. Like, I always thought it was great filmmaking. I think some of it was lost on me when I first saw it. When I watched it now, it made a lot more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
The simplicity of it, kind of just presenting this thing. Listen, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, it's hard to be that transparent, I think, even in a marriage for people.
Yeah, it's risky.
And also, you don't know what's in there.
No.
One thing I loved about that scene with her is that it wasn't like she planned it.
Yeah.
You know, she got very loose. She got very loose. She was feeling really comfortable, or else she wouldn't have said that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to be in a space where we're so at ease to be able to speak such truths. And obviously that was what was going on in that moment, you know? And it's almost like, is this a test?
Right.
He's kind of like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know?
Right.
What is this relationship over? It's also funny to me too, because I think, I'm not saying men think this way, but certain types of people would perceive it that way.
They
can't live in the gray.
Right.
Or maybe they grew up like, you know, for example, like my parents who are quite traditional. My father is like a very like, all right, what's the problem? Let's deal with it.
Yeah.
There's no like room for things to live like that.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of guys would hear that, or somebody in a relationship would hear that and then be like, all right, so do we divorce now? Like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like, do you not want to be with me? Because you want to have, like, is this happening every week? Like, what the fuck does that mean?
Right, try to quantify it so you can control
it. Yeah, or also to be like, what do you want me to do then? What, am I not doing something right?
Precisely.
So this is what I think some people might have said in the moment or approached at some point. It would have caused this kind of, you know, this reaction.
Yeah.
That could have been dealt with in a lot of different ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or it could have just gotten brushed right back under. I was high. I was drunk. I don't know. Don't listen to me. I just say crazy shit.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, I guess that was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely, it's also about trust, I think.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely about
and you
trust.
And how do you trust? You know, how do you trust people, even the closest people that you think you know?
And more importantly, how do you cope with breaching trust and then coming back together again?
Big one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Trust is so fragile.
Have you experienced that in relationships?
I think we've all experienced that in relationships, yes, for sure. That's what makes relationships strong, I think, is being able to withstand the disruptions and challenges that come your way, and being able to persist in finding solutions, you know, and coming back together.
Or just being with what is.
Also very challenging.
You know, the question is, and I know that that's what they propose at the end, is they're, you know, they're wandering. And this is weird too. They don't show his telling.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he confesses, right? So she confesses, he confesses.
Right.
Meanwhile, he didn't do anything.
Right.
Actually,
he almost did, but
he almost
didn't.
Did, but he didn't.
But she also almost did, but didn't. And all this mess. And for what?
And for what? And so then they have this whole wandering. And it is interesting, too, in that scene where they're wandering through the toy store. He lets her have the power of that decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's kind of like, what do we do?
Right.
Like, what do you think we should do?
Right.
And she just says, I don't know, what's whatever. Like,
which is a really cool power reversal.
It is.
That we get to in that final scene mm-hmm. where, like, it's almost like the female archetype has now reached a new level of autonomy and ability to be able to, like, she's tapping into, like, wisdom. Mm-hmm. And authority in that scene, which is not something that we have seen women possess in this entire film.
No.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. Although in some ways those women seem like Domino, mm-hmm. seems very in control.
Yeah. But
of her choices.
Yes. Yes.
To some degree. But
yeah.
But then there's the roommate who's a complete, you know, she's just falling all over this guy when he walks into her apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, really?
Well, I think they're both probably hookers. Is
Well, I thought that too, but I also was just like, man, Tom Cruise, you really landed a role here.
Yeah.
All you have to do is walk in the room and people are falling all over you. Like,
every
come on.
Every room
it's
he walks
funny
into.
To me. I was, and I knew that too, but I also felt like.
Well, he is a doctor.
Interesting. Oh, baby. That was funny too. I was watching that actually with some of it with my wife, and I was like, do doctors really get this much clout?
Right?
Everywhere he goes, he uses the doctor thing.
He does, yeah.
And I mean, maybe then, but I feel like now nobody gives a shit.
No, I don't know. It was like
old-timey almost.
It wasn't that long ago, but it was.
But it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I don't... And that is a huge part, too, is mm-hmm. that he's able to kind of... Whatever, by saying he's a doctor, get in
or
here.
Or throwing some money at it. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Bribing and declaring his status.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's like, can I come in and get a costume? I'm a doctor. Let me show you my credentials.
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, yes, come right in.
Yes, yes.
I'm like, what is up with doctors?
Yeah.
But, well, this is a thoughtful, this is the kind of conversation that could go on and on and on. If you're in a relationship, you'll think about it differently. If you're married, you might think about the story differently. I don't know. It's definitely makes you think a lot. It did for me.
Yeah, and yeah. It's a cool film to like to have watched a while ago and then to watch again maybe 5-10 years later.
Yeah, and I love doing that now. Like it's for me, it's almost like I'm going through my own little journey of myself.
Yeah.
When I do that. And I've done that a lot recently where I'll watch something that I saw when I was like 16 and I'm like, wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's what I thought this movie was. Wow.
Isn't that shocking?
It's
when
shocking.
That happens?
Yeah.
Oh man. Plus it's a beautiful film.
It is a beautiful film.
It's just so gorgeous and thoughtful. And the lighting is so extravagant. The scenes are so just well articulated, and I really appreciate the time that Kubrick takes with each scene.
Oh, I do too.
You know, it's intimate, and it feels like robust and full. Like you really feel like you're in this world with these people. For mm-hmm. all the confusion that it brings, it's a really satisfying film to watch.
It is, and I mean I love The Shining,
mm-hmm.
Which is also kind of same.
Yeah.
It's slow and it has, it's funny. I've talked about it on here before, but I had my daughter watch it with me, who's like 15. And sometimes with young people, they don't like slow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
They
yeah.
can't like sit for it.
Right.
What's happening? Nothing's happening, like,
right.
But she loved it. We sat the whole time and she was totally glued, And I thought like, wow,
that's awesome.
Cool. Because I've seen other movies with them, my kids, and they just don't have any interest after like 15 minutes. But but that does say a lot about his style of filmmaking because mm-hmm. and I appreciate it. I mean, it's sometimes things move way too quickly for me now in movies.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Just they just force feed you. It's like boom, boom, boom. You don't get to like be with the people at all.
Well, media is that way. Music is that way now.
Sure.
A lot of anything you watch on a screen is that way.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything else we want to share? Do you have anything?
I mean, we could go on for quite a while, but I won't do that to you.
No, it's okay. Tell me one more. Pick one of the things that you that you wanted to really hit on.
I feel like we've really touched on a lot of it. I think that you know, the main themes of the film are just about, like I said, relationships, trust, jealousy, intimacy, mm-hmm. and what we should, what is ours and what is meant to be shared. You know, and those aren't always the same thing. And I really think that this film takes you into a place where you're not sure, and most of us aren't. And I think that's honest.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well put. I was trying to think of another movie to compare this to, a little too late to actually have it ready for this. But I would love to think of a film that kind of does a similar thing, but maybe in a different way. I can't think of anything right now. Please write in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Send me a message if you can think of a good comparison. Good double feature for this one, if you could sit down all day and watch movies. Because I love that now. Now I'm like kind of thinking about that quite a bit.
Double features?
Just relationship movies that are kind of pushing the edge of what relationships are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like what works and what feels real.
Yeah.
It's hard to see that in movies. I think most of the time you see a lot of really typical role play that gets resolved.
That's true.
This does not get resolved, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, which is now making it more interesting to me on another thought. But, well, everyone, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe share your dark, dirty secrets with your spouse.
Yeah.
Or your partner.
Or maybe not.
Don't go wandering the streets of New York after. You probably won't see any prostitutes around here or a weird sex party. But I could be wrong. I don't know Rehoboth that well.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
I actually think there's some dark, weird things going on in this town.
Yeah, we should do some undercover work.
That actually would be the next thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Who knows what's going on during COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah. Secret non-COVID, you know, non-COVID safe sex parties happening in those big mansions on the beach.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, yes. Well, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm trying to think of another Kubrick movie that I could, like, do you have another recommendation out of Kubrick movies?
I love The Shining. I love A Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork is good.
All of his films are great for different reasons. And but Eyes Wide Shut stands apart from all of them.
It really does.
It's
a
very strange, you know, and he died.
I know.
Before that post-production was completed on that film, and there was some theories about, you know, conspiracies involving his death.
Are you serious?
Because he revealed certain things in that film that perhaps shouldn't have been released.
Wow.
So it's a very mysterious film, and yeah.
Stanley, where are you?
Yeah.
I would love to know what you did. What is it? What happened to you? Next week on Netflix.
That's right. That's
whatever
right.
happened to Stanley Kubrick. Well, listen, come back anytime.
Yeah, totally. We'll pick another film to do.
Let's do it again. And if you're listening and you want to, I don't know, if you're local to this area and you want to be a guest on my show, contact me.
Yeah.
I'm happy to have you. You know, I always say, like, if you see a movie and it bothered you and you were alone and you just have no one to share it with, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I'm probably going to be talking about some new movies coming up. I did see Nomadland. I think I'm going to do a podcast on that. And I have mixed feelings, I will just admit already. Oddly enough, reminds me in a weird way of this. If you guys don't know the director for this movie, Nomadland, check out her movies. I oddly was very interested in her after seeing it. I think her name is Chloe Zhao, and she did another movie called The Rider. She's done a bunch of other movies, indie movies. Really interesting style of making these movies. Basically, most of them are made with people that aren't even really actors, which is crazy.
Oh.
It will, like, really shock you. So it's like one of those movies where you see the movie and then you kind of don't realize until you look it up later and you're like, wait a second, that's a real person. That's a real person. That's a real person. Mm. Like, how in the hell did they just do that?
That's like, crazy.
It's really crazy. If you have any movie suggestions, let me know. But yeah, I will be working on another episode for you guys shortly, and follow us on all the social media. Also check out socialpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks so much.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. You ever love someone so much you thought you did?